Chapter 9. Sir remained displeased. He could find no reason to rejoice in the court's decision and made sure that Andrew and Little Miss knew it. Andrew came to him soon after the decree was final and said, "I have the check for you, sir."
"What check are you talking about?"
"For the entire balance in my corporate account, which I promised to pay over to you, sir, as the price for giving me my freedom."
"I never gave you your freedom,"
sir retorted.
"You simply went and took it."
His harsh voice made Andrew feel almost as though he were being short-circuited.
"Father,"
Little Miss said sternly. Sir, who was sitting huddled in his armchair with his lap robe wrapped about him, even though this was the warmest day of the summer so far, scowled at her. But in a somewhat more conciliatory tone, he said,
"All right, Andrew. You wanted your freedom for whatever that may be worth to you, and I didn't object to it. I suppose that must be interpreted as meaning that I supported your petition. Well, then, consider that I did. So now you are free.
You have my congratulations, Andrew. And I want to make the payment that I promised." Sir's eyes flashed with a trace of their old fire.
"I don't want your damned money, Andrew."
"We had an agreement, sir."
"Agreement? What agreement?" "You know that I never agree to anything. Look, Andrew, I'll take that check from you if it's the only way that you're going to feel that you really are free. But I think the idea is preposterous. I'm a very wealthy old man, and I don't have very long to live, and if you force me to take that money, I'm simply going to hand it away to charity. I'll give it to the Home for Orphan Robots, if there is one, or I'll found one if there isn't."
He laughed, a thin, joyless laugh. Neither Andrew nor Little Miss joined in.
"But you don't care, do you? You simply want to give the money away. Very well, Andrew. Let me have the check."
"Thank you, sir." He passed it across to the old man. Sir peered at it for a moment, holding it this way and that until his dimming eyes told him which side of the check he was looking at.
"You really have accumulated quite a fortune, Andrew. Give me a pen, will you, Mandy?"
Sir's hand shook as he took it from her, but when he began to write on the back of the check, it was in bold, steady strokes that went on for line after line, an inscription much longer than a mere endorsement would have required. He studied what he had written and nodded. Then he handed the check back to Andrew. Sir had endorsed the check, "Gerald Martin received as payment in full for the freedom of Robert Andrew NDR 113 Martin, per court decision." And then beneath that he had drawn a line and written, "Pay to the order of Andrew Martin a bonus for outstanding services rendered during the period of his employment here. His endorsement of this check implies irrevocable acceptance of the bonus. Gerald Martin."
"Will that be acceptable, Andrew?"
Sir asked. Andrew hesitated a moment. He showed the check to Little Miss, who read what Sir had written and shrugged. "You leave me with no choice, sir," Andrew said.
"Precisely. That's the way I like things to be. Now fold that check up and put it in your pocket. No, you don't have a pocket, do you? Well, put it away somewhere. Keep it as a souvenir, something to remember me by, and let's hear nothing more about it."
Sir glared defiantly at both Andrew and Little Miss.
"So, that's done, then. Now you're properly and truly free, is that right? Very well. Very well. From now on, you can select your own jobs around this place and do them as you please. I will give you no orders ever again, Andrew, except for this final one, that you do only what you please. As of this moment, you must act only according to your own free will, as stipulated and approved by the courts. Is that clear?"
"Yes, sir."
"But I am still responsible for you. That, too, is stipulated and approved by the courts. I don't own you anymore, but if you happen to get yourself in any trouble, I'm the one who will have to get you out of it. You may be free, but you don't have any of the civil rights of a human being. You remain my dependent, in other words, my ward by court order. I hope you understand that, Andrew.
Little Miss said, "You sound angry, Father."
I am. I didn't ask to have responsibility for the world's only free robot dumped on me.
Nothing has been dumped on you, Father. You accepted responsibility for Andrew the day you arranged to take him into your home. The court order doesn't change a bit of that. You won't have to do anything that you weren't bound to do before. As for Andrew's getting himself into trouble, what reason do you think he will? The three laws still hold.
And how can he be considered free?
Andrew said quietly, "Are not human beings bound by their laws, sir?" Sir glowered.
"Don't chop logic with me, Andrew. Human beings have voluntarily arrived at a social contract, a code of laws which they willingly agree to abide by, because life in a civilized society would be untenable otherwise. Those who refuse to abide by those laws and therefore make life untenable for others are punished and, we like to think, eventually rehabilitated. But a robot doesn't live by any voluntary social contract. A robot obeys its code of laws because it has no choice but to obey, even a so-called free robot."
"But as you say, sir, human laws exist and must be obeyed, and those who live under those laws regard themselves as free, nevertheless. So a robot..."
"Enough!"
Sir roared. He swept his lap robe to the floor and lurched uncertainly out of his chair.
"I don't feel like discussing this any further, thank you. I'm going upstairs. Good night, Amanda." "Good night, Andrew."
"Good night to you, sir. Shall I see you to your room?" Andrew asked.
"You needn't bother. I'm still strong enough to climb a flight of stairs. You go about your business, whatever that may be. I'll go about mine."
He tottered away. Andrew and Little Miss exchanged troubled glances, but neither of them said anything. After that, Sir rarely left his bedroom. His meals were prepared and brought to him by the simple TZ model robot who looked after the kitchen. He never asked Andrew upstairs for any reason, and Andrew would not take it upon himself to intrude on Sir's privacy. And so from that time on, Andrew saw Sir only on those infrequent occasions when the old man chose to descend into the main part of the house. Andrew had not lived in the house himself for some time. As his woodworking business had expanded, it had become awkward for him to continue to operate out of the little attic studio that Sir had set aside for him at the beginning. So it had been decided a few years back that he would be allowed to set up a little dwelling of his own, a two-story cabin at the edge of the woods that flanked the Martin estate. It was a pleasant, airy cabin set on a little rise with ferns and glistening-leaved shrubs all about, and a towering redwood tree just a short distance away. Three robot workmen had built it for him in a matter of a few days, working under the direction of a human foreman. The cabin had no bedroom, of course, nor a kitchen, nor any bathroom facilities. One of the rooms was a library and office where Andrew kept his reference books and sketches and business records. And the other and much larger room was the workshop where Andrew kept his carpentry equipment and stored the work in progress. A small shed adjoining the building was used to house the assortment of exotic woods that Andrew used in the jewelry-making segment of his enterprise, and the stack of less rare lumber that went into his much sought-after pieces of furniture. There was never any end of jobs for him to do. The publicity over his attaining free status had generated worldwide interest in the things that Andrew made, and scarcely a morning went by without three or four orders turning up on his computer. He had a backlog of commissions stretching years into the future now, so that he finally had to set up a waiting list simply for the privilege of placing an order with him. He was working harder now as a free robot than he ever had in the years when he had technically been the property of Sir. It was not at all unusual for Andrew to put in 36 or even 48 straight hours of work without emerging from his cabin, since he had no need, naturally, for food or sleep or rest of any kind. His bank account swelled and swelled. He insisted on repaying Sir for the entire cost of building his little house, In this time, Sir was willing to accept the money purely for the sake of proper form. Title to the structure was legally transferred to Andrew, and he executed a formal lease covering the portion of Gerald Martin's land on which the building stood. Little Miss, who still lived just up the coast in the house she and Lloyd Charney had built long ago when they had first been married, never failed to look in on him whenever she came to Sir's estate to pay a call on her father. As a rule, Little Miss would stop off at Andrew's workshop as soon as she arrived, and chat with him a while and look at his latest projects before going on into the main house where Sir was. Often she brought Little Sir with her, though Andrew no longer called him that, for Little Sir had ceased to be a boy quite some time back. He was a tall and robust young man now, with a flaring russet-colored mustache, nearly as awesome as his grandfather's, and an imposing set of side whiskers as well. And soon after the court decision that made Andrew a free robot, he forbade Andrew to use the old nickname. "Does it displease you, Little Sir?" Andrew asked. "I thought you found it amusing."
"I did."
"But now that you are a full-grown man, it seems condescending to you, is that it? An affront to your dignity? You know I have the highest respect for your..."
"It has nothing to do with my dignity,"
Little Sir said. "It has to do with yours." "I don't understand, Little Sir."
"Evidently not. But look at it this way, Andrew. Little Sir may be a charming name, and you and I certainly take it that way, but in fact, what it is the kind of groveling name that an old family retainer would use when speaking to the master's son, or in this case, the master's grandson. It isn't appropriate anymore. Do you see, Andrew? My grandfather isn't your master nowadays, and I'm not a cute little boy. A free robot shouldn't call anyone Little Sir. Is that clear? I call you Andrew, always have. And from now on, you must call me George."
It was phrased as an order, so Andrew had no choice but to agree. He ceased calling George Charney Little Sir as of that moment. But Little Miss remained Little Miss for him. It was unthinkable for Andrew to have to call her Mrs. Charney, and even Amanda seemed like an improper and impertinent mode of address. She was Little Miss to him, and nothing other than Little Miss, even though she was a woman with graying hair now, lean and trim and as beautiful as ever, but undeniably growing old. Andrew hoped that she would never give him the same sort of order that her son had, and she never did. Little Miss it was, Little Miss it would always be. One day George and Little Miss came to the house, but neither of them made the usual stop at Andrew's place before going in to see Sir. Andrew noticed the car arrive and continue on past his own separate little driveway and wondered why. He felt troubled when half an hour passed, and then half an hour more, and neither of them came to him. Had he given offense in some way on their last visit? No, that seemed unlikely. But was there some problem in the main house, then? He distracted himself by plunging into his work, but it took all his robotic powers of self-discipline to make himself concentrate, and even so nothing seemed to go as smoothly as it usually did. And then, late in the afternoon, George Charney came out back to see him, alone. "Is anything wrong, George?" Andrew asked a moment after George had entered.
"I'm afraid that there is, Andrew. My grandfather is dying."
"Dying?" Andrew said numbly. Death was a concept he had long thought about, but had never really understood. George nodded somberly.
"My mother is at his bedside now. Grandfather wants you to be there, too."
"He does? It isn't your mother who has sent for me, but Sir himself?"
"Sir himself, yes."
Andrew felt a faint tremor in his fingertips. It was as close as he could come to a physical expression of excitement, but there was distress mingled with the sensation. Sir, dying. He shut down his tools and hurried across to the main house, with George Charney trotting along beside him. Sir was lying quietly in the bed in which he had spent most of his time in recent years. His hair had thinned to a few white wisps. Even his glorious mustache now was a sad, drooping thing. He looked very pale, as though his skin were becoming transparent, and he scarcely seemed to be breathing. But his eyes were open, his fierce old eyes, his piercing, intense blue eyes, and he managed a small smile, the merest upturning of his lips, as he saw Andrew come into the room.
"Sir. Oh, sir. Sir."
"Come here, Andrew."
Sir's voice sounded surprisingly strong, the voice of the sir of old. Andrew faltered, too confused to respond.
Come here, I said. That's an order. I said once that I wasn't going to give you any more orders, but this is an exception. Just about the last one I'm ever going to give you. You can count on that.
Yes, sir. Andrew came forward. Sir pulled one hand out from under the coverlet. It seemed to be something of a struggle for him to move the blanket aside, and George rushed forward to help him.
No!
Sir said with a trace of his familiar irascibility.
Damn it, don't try to do it for me, George. I'm only dying, not crippled.
Angrily he pushed the coverlet down just far enough to raise his hand and held it out toward the robot.
Andrew, he said. Andrew!
Oh, sir,
Andrew began, and he fell silent. He did not know what to say. He had never before been at the side of someone who was dying, had never so much as seen a dead person. He knew that death was the human way of ceasing to function. It was an involuntary and irreversible dismantling that happened eventually to all human beings. Since it was inevitable, Andrew wanted to think that it was something that humans took for granted as a natural process and did not look upon with fear or distaste. But he was not entirely sure of that, and Sir had lived so long. He must be so accustomed to being alive. And there had always been so much life and vitality in him.
Give me your hand, Andrew.
Of course, sir.
Andrew took Sir's cool, pale, shriveled hand into his own, gnarled ancient flesh against smooth, ageless plastic that was without flaw. Sir said,
You're a splendid robot. Do you know that, Andrew? Truly splendid. The finest robot that was ever made.
Thank you, sir.
I wanted to tell you that. And one other thing. I'm glad you're free. That's all. It's important to me that I had a chance to tell you that. All right, Andrew.
It was an unmistakable dismissal. Andrew no longer had Sir's attention. He released Sir's trembling hand and stepped back from the bed, taking up a position alongside George and Little Miss. Little Miss reached forward and touched Andrew's arm just above the elbow, lightly, affectionately, but she said nothing, nor did George. The old man seemed to have withdrawn into some private realm far away. The only sound in the room now was Sir's increasingly rough breathing, becoming ever more harsh, ever less regular. Sir lay motionless, staring upward at nothing at all. His face was as expressionless as any robot's. Andrew was utterly at a loss. He could only remain standing, absolutely silent, absolutely motionless, watching what he knew must be Sir's final moments. The old man's breathing grew rougher yet. He made an odd gargling sound deep in his throat that was like no sound Andrew had ever heard in his entire existence. Then all was still. Other than the cessation of Sir's breathing, Andrew was unable to detect any change in him. He had been virtually motionless a moment ago, and he was motionless now. He had stared blindly upward before, and he was staring upward now. Andrew realized, though, that something profound had just happened, something that was wholly beyond his comprehension. Sir had passed across that mysterious threshold that separated death from life. There was no more Sir. Sir was gone. Only this empty husk remained. Little Miss broke the endless silence at last with a soft cough. There were no tears in her eyes, but Andrew could see that she was deeply moved. She said,
I'm glad you got here before he went, Andrew. You belonged here. You were one of us.
Once more, Andrew did not know what to reply. Little Miss said,
And it was wonderful to hear him say what he did to you. He may not have seemed friendly to you toward the end, Andrew, but he was old, you know, and it hurt him that you should have wanted to be free. But he forgave you for that right at the last, didn't he, Andrew?
And then Andrew found the words to say. He said,
I never would have been free without him, Little Miss.